Time now to look behind the medical headlines, and our resident pharmacist Elizabeth Roddick joins us now from New Life Pharmacy. Hello.
Hello, Simon.
You're not on holiday?
Definitely not.
You never have holidays, do you?
Sometimes.
Right, we've got lots to do. Talking of holidays, actually, we're going to be covering some of the great advice now for holidays. Holiday time is here, and what are the things to remember? Especially if you're on a repeat prescription if you're going away.
I know it may sound obvious, Simon, but do get your repeat prescriptions early enough before you go. The number of people I've had in recently who've forgotten and are literally going on holiday the next day, it seems to be up in this year. I don't know what's happening. The good news is that your pharmacist can deal with these emergencies. There are, however, certain medicines that can't be given an emergency prescription. Medicines such as controlled drugs, morphine, tramadol, other strong painkillers. These must be given on an actual prescription, so don't please run out of them. The other thing is phenobarbital. That can't be given an emergency prescription unless it's for epilepsy. So think ahead is definitely the message.
Now, what about travelling actually with medicines then?
I always suggest putting your medicine in your hand luggage if possible. Suitcases do get delayed or lost sometimes, particularly if you've more than one airport to go through. That certainly happened to me one time. The other thing is, take a list of your medicines with you. The other half of a prescription, for example, has a list of the medicines. And most pharmacies can print out a list for you if you don't have that.
Another one, syringes. What about them?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. If you see a type 1 diabetic, you may well have to inject yourself on a flight. And it's sometimes better to check with the actual airline. But generally, have a letter from your doctor, which can be shown if there's any query. Make sure you do that.
Are there certain medicines then that you can take abroad?
Sometimes medicines such as codeine are a problem in certain countries. The gov.uk website has a full list of embassies in the UK, and you can check what is allowed and what isn't. So it's worthwhile checking if you're maybe on an unusual medicine.
And sometimes we're tempted to wait till we get there to buy stuff, but there's some things that are better to take with us, do you think?
Obviously, your prescribed medicine is an obvious one, but I tend to have a list of useful medicines such as paracetamol for pain, headaches, indigestion remedies if you're taking food that you're not used to, and obviously something for diarrhoea, loperamide, or these rehydration sachets are useful. That replaces the fluid when you've got a problem, a tummy upset. Insect repellent, insect bite cream. It's a good idea to get the repellent on as quickly as possible if you're going to one of these places that does have a problem with bites. Sun protection creams, maybe an antiseptic cream, plasters, something like a chubby grip for a sprained ankle. These are the sort of things that maybe it's worthwhile packing.
It's supposed to be a holiday you're going on. Do you know what I mean? Now, actually, interesting, you mentioned about indigestion there, remedies, because one of the headlines in the last couple of weeks was that millions of people taking common heartburn and indigestion medication could be at increased risk of, and this is quite serious, I would have said, death, is what it says. So what sort of medicines are they actually talking about?
They're called proton pump inhibitors, and they're given to people for heartburn and reflux. Also given as a preventative, for example, if you're taking aspirin on a daily basis to prevent further strokes or heart attacks, or if your doctor has prescribed something called a non-steroidal medicine, I've talked about that before, like ibuprofen or naproxen, they would give you a PPI to protect the stomach as well. So the research was about, it was a US study looking at whether PPIs, and that's these particular medicines, but also H2 blockers. Now, that's medicines like Zantac. Maybe some of you have heard of that. The generic is ranitidine. Whether that could cause an increase in death. Now, the researchers looked at databases, over 349,000 people, average age of 61, 94% of whom were male, and the likelihood of death in this particular research project over a five-year period. And as well as age, of course, the researchers had to take into account other chronic illnesses such as diabetes, high blood pressure, stroke, cancer. The results were that there was a greater risk of death from the proton pump inhibitor medicine, people who were taking them compared with the H2, that's the ranitidine. What I'm saying is omeprazole and lansoprazole, there was a greater increase in death than those with, say, ranitidine. Now, there was, the researchers said, an increase in death when taking these medicines, particularly for longer periods. Now, before people get too alarmed by these headlines. The research did not prove it was because of this particular medicine or these medicines that was an increased risk. And again, the headline is very, very worrying. Certainly, if you don't need to be on these medicines long term, it's worthwhile having a word with your doctor, asking the question. But for now, the safety of the medicines has been proved. I've talked about the MHRA. That's an agency that looks at safety of medicines. They have been proved to be safe. But please don't worry. But certainly ask the question of your doctor. Do I have to be on these? And if you have to, it's safe to do so.
It just seems a bit broad when it says death. I mean, what they're saying, why are people dying if supposedly linked with these?
Well, what they're saying is that if you are taking these medicines, they said in the research, if you're taking these medicines, you've an increased risk of death. But what I'm saying is when you actually look at the research, they didn't prove that. The problem is the researchers come up with their findings, and then you get other people who look at the whole picture and say, have they actually proved that? In this case, they haven't. But I think definitely if you're on a medicine like this long term, then I think it's worthwhile asking, should you be on it? Because there are some people who are stuck on medicines maybe for a long time. They haven't asked the question, they haven't had a review, and it's worthwhile asking. And maybe you're on it and don't worry if you are.
All right, thank you for that. Another headline, brain training games boost the memory and may reduce the risk of dementia. Now, I don't play these things, so I'm not going to be helped, am I?
Well, researchers were from the University of Cambridge in East Anglia, and they were using a new brain training app, and it's called the Game Show. And all of the participants had mild cognitive impairment. Now, what I mean by that is slight memory loss, but they couldn't be classed as having dementia. But from research, we know that at least 5 to 15% of these people with a slight memory loss will go on to develop dementia. Now, most cognitive therapy programs are extremely boring, so they were trying to make this very enjoyable. So 42 adults, who were all about 75 years of age, and they played the game show for 8 hours over 4 weeks, or the other half just attended the clinic for assessment. The assessment was a memory test, remembering location, events. And the game involved opening boxes on a screen, and then they had to match the pattern. And interestingly, there was a virtual quiz show host, and it was also lots of music as well. So it was interesting and stimulating. Now, after 4 weeks, those that played the game made significantly fewer errors in the test, reported high levels of enjoyment, and they really wanted to continue playing. It was, however, a very small study and didn't actually use people with dementia. That's the first thing. And of course, the headline is dementia. Of course, it's supervised by researchers, and therefore, would the people have stuck to the game as long if they didn't have the researchers watching them? That's another thing. So the training didn't, as the headline suggests, reduce the risk of dementia, but it could help with mild memory loss. I think from the study, could something be developed, I'm thinking for visually impaired people, and could this be used in someone's home, for example, without the researchers overseeing it or making sure that you did watch it?
What about other tips then for dealing with dementia then, or warding it off?
I think one of the most important things is social interaction. We're hearing in the press about loneliness and getting out, meeting people in clubs, taking part in activities, particularly with people in the same situation. That can be extremely stimulating. Enjoying yourself while you're doing exercise, walking, taking part in a movement class or meeting up and chatting with like-minded individuals. Memory boxes are an idea containing smells that evoke happy times, recordings of family and taking part in an activity that you enjoy. The local church near my pharmacy has an activities club for those with dementia, and another one nearby is running a choir that might be of interest to people.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how a music and some people with dementia can actually unlock a lot of things. I've seen footage of a gentleman in a care home in America, and he didn't interact, he didn't talk, but if they played music from, not his childhood, but from way, way back, he would come out and he would chat away until, you know, the music would finish, and then he would gradually regress back into his quiet self. But it's incredible how that can trigger it. Also, there's things like sensory gardens, aren't there?
Yeah, they have wonderful things. They have scented plants, sculptures that can be felt, water features to hear and touch, and as well as braille and audio induction loop descriptions. I mean, the other thing is memory cafes. and you were talking about music there, it's also something that's growing in numbers. They tend to be run by volunteers, but are supported by health professionals. And it's possibly, again, playing music from a certain era. Alzheimer's Scotland or NHS England have an ability to search for one near your home if that's something you would like to take part in.
Because I know in my own experiences with family members that have had dementia, and sometimes you watch people and you think they're asking questions of these people all the time, and you think it's nice when you get into an area where perhaps it's maybe a few years ago and you can just start a conversation then, and then it flows from the person with the dementia.
Yeah, if you can get that going, that's absolutely wonderful. Yeah, absolutely.
I used to love that with my mum, because my Uncle Tony would come up and then we would start talking. I'd learn, fairly recently I was learning stuff that I hadn't known about, and the two of them, we were talking way back in the 50s and the 40s, and it's quite incredible that even though she had dementia, she still remembered all these sort of things and could talk all about that. It's quite incredible. It's an unpleasant condition, isn't it, in a lot of ways?
I think the demeanour of a person, and, you know, it makes such a difference if that stimulation has happened. It can make such a difference. If you're a carer, you can see the difference in the person. So that's really nice as well.
If you have any questions on anything we've covered, we would love to hear from you. When I say we, Elizabeth would love to hear from you. And you can get in touch with me here, or you can also get in touch with Elizabeth via the website, which is
www.newlifepharmacy.co.uk. And I was at a carers meeting last night doing a little talk. So if anyone out there was listening to my talk and is listening to this, hello.
And hello from me.
Thanks, Simon.
Thanks very much, Elizabeth. And we will have you back very soon.
Thank you.